Here today is Maria Elena Young. She's a doctoral student in the Department of Community Health Sciences at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. Her research uses qualitative and quantitative methods to examine public health impact of the immigration system, including the creation of legal status, immigration enforcement, and inclusive state and local policies. She is a volunteer with the Friends of Orange County Detainees and provides visits and support to individuals in immigration detention.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Maria Elena. I have no disclosures to make, but I don't have a disclosure slide. So the purpose of my talk today is to present to all of you findings that from a study that I did looking at the connections between deportations under the Secure Communities Enforcement Program and the health of well-being in communities in California. As Nolan introduced to you, Secure Communities is a national enforcement program that involves local law enforcement jurisdictions in the identification and apprehension of immigrants, potentially for deportation. Unfortunately, we really don't know very much about the population level impact of this program. And so the purpose of my study was to really try to assess in one particular state what's happening as a result of the massive kind of unrolling of this large policy. So to sort of give you a picture of what's happening with Secure Communities in California and what the possible health impacts of it are, first I'll walk through a little bit about how Secure Communities works. Nolan started to talk a little bit about that, but I think really thinking about it as a policy and as a set of enforcement activities helps us to see some of those connections between the policy and health. Then I'll give you some descriptive statistics to talk a little bit about what Secure Communities looked like in California in 2011, which is the year I focus on. And then I'll present results from my analysis testing associations between deportations under ESCOM and health in California. So to begin, Secure Communities initiates for an individual when they come into contact with police. Police departments, when they arrest somebody or have somebody in their custody, will take fingerprints. Those fingerprints will be run through immigration or crime federal databases. A subset of those individuals will be matched for a possible immigration violation. Those individuals will have deportation proceedings initiated against them. They may be detained in a detention center. They all go through lengthy and often emotionally and economically costly deportation defense proceedings. And then finally, a subset of those individuals will ultimately be deported. So when we think about this kind of broad net of Secure Communities and what it means for health, we can really think about several different types of pathways. First, Secure Communities has been the significant driver in the increase and massive increase in the number of deportations that Nolan was referencing just now. We're currently living through a period of mass deportation that has historically occurred during times like the Great Depression. And so Secure Communities has really been a driver in changing the social, economic, and political climate that immigrants are living in. So we can hypothesize that at the local level, communities where ESCOM, as it's referred to, is being more aggressively enforced, that you might have a more anti-immigrant or more hostile immigrant environment. Whereas in communities where it's perhaps being mitigated or where it's being enforced less actively, you might have a more immigrant-friendly community. Second, ESCOM has been able to expand enforcement by involving local law enforcement, as Nolan was discussing. And as we can see from his work and work of some of the others that we're going to present today, that's really changed the nature of communities that people are living in. And then finally, ESCOM ultimately results in deportations for thousands of individuals. So that has an immediate impact on themselves, their families, and ripple effects throughout their community. So when we really think about ESCOM both as a policy and as a set of enforcement practices, we can say that it creates stress, experiences of discrimination, and a sense of uncertainty and fear in both the kind of the broad social environment in which individuals live, their immediate communities, and amongst the individuals who are immediately affected by the policy. So to really try to understand this at a population level, what sort of trends we're seeing as a result of ESCOM, I created a database using publicly available data from the Department of Homeland Security. They report the number of submissions, matches, and deportations under ESCOM, and I linked that with data from the California Health Interview Survey. For my analysis, what I did was I created a county rate of deportation. Oh, that little guy there is going to make it hard. So what I did was basically, very simply, divided the number of total deportations in a county over the number of non-citizens in that county to create a rate of non-citizen deportation, I'm sorry, deportations per non-citizen population. And then I linked that with California Health Interview Survey data, which has a wide series of measures related to immigration and health. And specifically, I looked at three outcomes to sort of get a range of different health health outcomes. One is just a general measure of self-reported health. The other is whether or not an individual has a usual source of care. And then finally, their level of psychological distress using the Kessler 6 scale. And then I also included in the models a measure of legal status, because as we're discussing here today, an individual's legal status is a serious, very important marker of their possible risk for deportation. And so in my models, I also included covariates, and I used multi-level models with a random intercept per county. So before showing you results from that specific analysis, I want to give you a picture of what SCOM looked like in California in 2011. I've charted for you here the county deportation rate per non-citizen population for all 58 counties in California. And what you can see is there's a very significant variation. So we've got some counties that are very high, and with some counties with a deportation rate essentially of zero. And for the analysis, and just to make it easy to interpret, I broke these into quartiles. So you have counties that are very high, high, medium, and low deportation rate. And just to give you a picture of what that looks like, Imperial County, it's a county on the eastern part of California, right along the U.S.-Mexico border. In 2011, it had 33,000 non-citizens. There were a total of over 9,000 submissions to the SCOM system. Of that, over 2,000 people were matched. These are 2,000 people who are potentially deportable. And then ultimately, over 1,000 people were deported for a final rate of 31.5 per 1,000. So you kind of get a picture here of sort of this broader net that's cast. Many, many people caught up in this system, even if they aren't ultimately deported. In contrast, we can look at Los Angeles County. Sorry, I live in LA, so to me that's California. Los Angeles County, that just does have a significant portion of the whole population, has almost 2 million non-citizens, and in 2011 had over 300,000 submissions to SCOM. There were over 35,000 matches, and ultimately over 8,000 deportations as a result of this program, with a rate of 5.3 per 1,000. And this is, again, a kind of a medium rate county. I was interested in sort of trying to understand what are some of the socio-demographic characteristics of a county that might be associated with the deportation rate, and so found that actually counties that had a higher proportion of their population that was non-citizen had lower deportation rates. I wanted to look at some political factors. So counties that actually had more registered Republicans actually had lower deportation rates. There was no association based on the federal poverty level of the county. But interestingly, the counties that had a higher Hispanic population had higher deportation rates. And I think this really illustrates sort of some of the complexities and sort of the demographic and perhaps political factors driving this policy and how it's implemented in each county. So I'm presenting the results of my multi-level regression analyses, and really first want to say that I really did not find particularly strong findings indicating that there was an association between the rate of deportation and health, and I'll talk about that for you, for all of you. First, looking at the self-rated health, what I found was that in counties that had very high rates of deportation and low rates of deportation, actually a higher proportion of residents reported having excellent health. And so what we see is actually sort of a U-shaped finding where there's better health and sort of the extremes of the distribution of deportation rate. Similarly, just to look at it on the other side, counties that had a very high rate or low rate of deportation had lower proportion of individuals reporting only fair or poor health. Looking at individuals who had a usual source of care, there was no difference across the counties regardless of what their deportation rate was. On average, in counties, people had about 90% of individuals had access to some sort of usual source of care. And then finally, when I looked at psychological distress, I also found no statistically significant findings. Essentially, regardless of the rate of deportation in the counties, individuals had about a 1.96 to 1.97 level of distress on a scale of 1 to 6. What I did find, however, was that there were significant disparities in the three health outcomes across the legal status groups. So you can see here for usual source of care, undocumented immigrants, only about 80% reported having a usual source of care, compared to over 90 for US-born, but it says value. And then similarly for psychological distress, undocumented immigrants reported the highest levels of psychological distress. And non-citizens, both the green card holders and non-green card holders, had the highest proportion of individuals who had only fair or poor health. So what does all of this tell us? I mean, first, I think a really important point and something that that William brought up is that this is that undocumented immigrants and immigrants who don't have citizenship, meaning they are deportable, are a highly vulnerable group. My findings show that regardless of the rate of deportation that's going on in a county, there are disparities by legal status. And I think that's something important because we often hypothesize that deportation is sort of on the pathway between health for immigrants. And I think it probably is, but we need to remember that even independent of what's happening with deportations, undocumented immigrants and non-citizens are a vulnerable group. In terms of the findings about by looking at the rate of deportation and health outcomes, I think it's a lot more of a complex story. I mean, first, one thing that we really need to consider is that FCOM, like lots of social policies, have multiple pathways to health. And so not all health outcomes are going to be immediately affected by the implementation of a new policy. So this, I think the best finding that illustrates this point is that we found that there was no significant finding across usual source of care, regardless of the rate of deportation in the county. So this is 1 year of data. This was just after the program had been implemented for about a year, year and a half in each county. And what that suggests is that for individuals who perhaps already have an established source of care, the implementation of a new enforcement policy may not immediately disrupt their patterns of care seeking or the trust that they already have with providers. That doesn't mean over the long term it might not kind of fray those connections, but in the short term may not have an immediate effect. That doesn't mean though that SCOM doesn't have an impact on health. I think the other thing that we have to consider is that the association between the numerical outcome of SCOM, the actual number of deportations, and health might not be the immediate pathway between this policy and health outcomes. So specifically, I think the finding that was most surprising for me was the lack of significance for distress. There was no significant difference in the level of distress across the counties, regardless of their rate of deportation. And I think this could be a result of the fact that people's distress around issues of deportation may be more linked to whether or not they know somebody who has been deported, or if they've heard about a home raid going on in their community. It might also be more due to what they're seeing on the nightly news, which often reports nationally and is completely independent of, you know, the actual numbers of deportation that are happening in your community. And then finally, I think it's really important to think about how we're measuring this idea of enforcement and how we're measuring SCOM in particular. SCOM is just but one policy that is driving deportations. As Nolan mentioned in one of his slides, there's the 287G program, which is no longer in effect. PEP is now what's around. Home raids are another mechanism by which people get caught up in this broader system. And in addition, the SCOM doesn't necessarily reflect the specifics of policing that are happening on the ground, which I think Nolan did a great job of highlighting. And so sort of something that needs to be thought of more broadly is how we can think about SCOM as part of the broader environment of enforcement and policing that immigrants are living in. And I think to highlight that, the findings looking at self-rated health really indicate that there's something qualitatively different happening in these communities that have different levels of deportation. So we've had a sort of almost a contradictory finding that the counties with the highest level of deportation had apparently a better kind of distribution of self-rated health, and that might actually be due to, you know, very different levels of other types of deportations occurring, or perhaps different policing practices happening in those communities. So I think moving forward and kind of thinking about how we can continue this area of research, first for me it's really heartening to see all of these presentations and see that we're all using different methods to try to grapple with these really complicated questions. But I think two specific areas for advancing this. First is to really try to think about how we're measuring and how we're conceptualizing the idea of enforcement. This particular study, we use a numerical measure. Other studies might use more measures of people's experiences or their contact with issues of enforcement and deportation in their social networks. And then I think the second thing is really to think more about policies like this in the broader context of the climate that immigrants are living in. And I want to leave you all with a picture here. This is a plaza in Tijuana, Mexico, where individuals who are deported to Mexico from California enter after passing through Mexican migration. And I think it's really just a reminder that the end point for policies like ESCOM is deportation. And individuals who are no longer in this country are still an important part of this broader research agenda of trying to think about the impact of our enforcement policies. Thank you all so much. Very great question. I'm glad you asked. So the question was whether or not I looked at subgroups. And yes, I did. So that was the rate was for the entire county, so the percentage of the number of non-citizens for the entire county. And I actually did explore interactions with legal status, interactions with race, and actually did not find that there are any differences. So I was able to present for you the overall finding for the entire county.
Just one more. I'm in the middle of
Great question. Answer yes and no. First, anybody who's a non-citizen can be deported. And in the U.S., part of our enforcement policy at the national level has actually been to more aggressively go and try to find and deport individuals who are green card holders. Laws changed very significantly in the mid to late 90s that actually make it easier to deport green card holders. So I actually thought about that very question that you're bringing up quite a bit and really felt that it was important to look at non-citizens. A lot of individuals who are green card holders actually might not be aware of how potentially vulnerable they are to deportation. So when we really think about this at a population level, we need to include them in our measures. Now, did that potentially sort of bias down my results? It could have been. I think if I ran this based on looking at the county rate, on the county proportion that's undocumented, the results may be different. But again, I really was basing it on the idea of who could potentially be deported here. So thank you. That was a really great question.
I know that we have lots of questions for all of them, so hopefully there'll be time at the end and we can all stay later. So the next session, we actually have three individuals who are going to be presenting. I know that's not represented in your program, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about all of them. Lily Mann is a research associate in the Department of Social Sciences and Health Policy at the Wake Forest School of Medicine. She assists in the design, implementation, and evaluation of community-based participatory research studies, focusing on HIV prevention interventions and addressing barriers to health service access among Latino and immigrant communities. Florence Simon, originally from El Salvador, is director of programs at El Pueblo Incorporated, an organization based out of Raleigh, North Carolina, whose mission is for Latinos to achieve positive social change through consciousness, capacity, and community action. She's a community advocate, health educator, and program administrator who is committed to leadership development and action among Latinas and Latinos throughout North Carolina. Brisa Urquieta de Hernandez is a program manager in the research division at the Department of Family Medicine, Carolina's healthcare system. She's a member of the Mecklenburg Area Partnership for Primary Care Research, a transdisciplinary group in Charlotte, North Carolina, that engages community stakeholders to better understand the social and spatial determinants of health and translate results of research. She's also a PhD student in the Department of Geography and Earth Sciences at UNC Charlotte. And just before they come up, and if people do leave starting to get near the end of the presentations, if you could just hold the door behind you when you go out, it helps not make so much noise for all the speakers. That would be great.